Welcome to the 'Cause I Love You podcast, a series of conversations designed to convene faith, civic, and nonprofit leaders in and around Colorado Springs. We want to foster greater collaboration between faith and civic partners so the church can be our city's greatest contributor towards human flourishing. Each month, we explore topics and struggles impacting people in the Pikes Peak region and connect you to the leaders that are working to end suffering and increase flourishing.
Well, hello, 'Cause I Love You friends, fans, and followers. Welcome back to another episode of the 'Cause I Love You podcast, a conversation designed to put you at the intersection of the church and the city. My name is Stu Davis, and I have the daily privilege of being able to lead this 'Cause I Love You experiment, where we try to convince the city that the church is here for good, and to convince the church that the city actually wants your help. But we all know the very real reason why so many of you listen to these every month. You want to hear the effervescent voice of our project manager.
Wow.
The oracle in our matrix, Ms. Corey Smith. Corey, here you are.
Wow.
Can you believe it's February?
I cannot. I am not ready, but here we are.
Welcome to 2023.
Still can't believe it.
I mean, we're not brand new, but this is still the front end of
the year.
We
have a little bit under our belt.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty fresh.
A fresh 30 days behind us.
Wow.
Well, we're so experienced in 2023 already. Here we are. So February in Colorado, Corey, means that we are in full-on sweater season.
Oh, yes.
And I know that you love nothing more than sweaters, overcast skies, and whatever other reasons you need to have a cup of coffee in your hand.
Yeah.
Am
Stu,
I right?
You are 1,000% right. And I also just want to put it out there that I think I become my truest self when it's cold outside and overcast. Like when the clouds roll in, I'm like, ah, I have arrived.
What should we read into that?
Well,
what should we know about Corey
Smith? I don't
know
that we should read too much into it. I think we should just let it be, you know, a little superpower. Cold weather, truest self.
Okay. I can roll with that. So here we are. It is February. Again, not brand new to the year, but still at the front end. What would we want to encourage our friends and the listeners to these episodes to do this year?
I think the start of a new year, Stu, I don't know about you. I think if we let it, it can be a really natural time to assess ourselves and what we're bringing to our communities and our families and our work. Like, it's a really natural time to assess those things. And I would say to our listeners, find something simple, practical. Take stock of what you can bring to your community. And I mean, like, if you're an accountant, could you use that skill for our city? If you are...
not as an employment, but as a way to help bring your family, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Bring your vocation, bring your strength. If you have energy to give, if you are retired and you have some time on your hands, if you're a stay-at-home mom that can do a little more, bring your kiddos along, like assess your areas of strength and find a way to practically get connected and give back to the Pikes Peak region. And you know this, and I know this, but 'Cause I Love You would love to be a resource for that. So if there's somebody out there that's listening going, how can I plug into the Pikes Peak region, please don't hesitate to reach out, info@causeiloveyou.com, and we can give you some great ideas.
And you mentioned a word that I think we talk about quite a bit, but it's worth highlighting, is simple. In other words, it doesn't have to be this mountain size, campaign size, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life initiative.
Yes.
It can just be, I can bake some cookies for the school, for the teachers at the school down the
up
street.
The road. Yep.
I can go lend a hand at this place for an hour.
Yep.
You know, just finding simple, short-term, easy things to do that in the context of an effort by a whole group of people, a church, a group of neighbors that all want to help together can really add up to a lot of things.
Yep.
But I think we just need to kind of burst people's bubble a little bit that says it has to be huge. It can just be very small, very simple, very
practical.
Basic.
Yeah. Yep. That's really good. Stu, so we're here for a reason. What is our podcast about today? What's this conversation?
Yeah, I've actually been so intrigued to have this conversation for quite a while. I know I probably say that all the time, but this conversation with Dr. Leon Kelly, the El Paso County Coroner, and Susan Whelan, the Executive Director for the El Paso County Department of Public Health. These two work very closely together. They have for many years, as we'll discover in this conversation, but they really have an ability to kind of see across our community in a way that very few other people do. They've got a perspective frankly, on what's killing our community. They see a lot of trends both behind and in front of us. And they really have, I think, these very unique perspectives to be able to talk about what's happening in our city in a very real-time way that I think we should be paying attention to.
That's good.
Yeah. So I'm actually really excited because I think they're going to be very practical. I also think that they're going to kind of share their perspectives on leadership and the challenges of these last couple of years that I think all of us could benefit from. And frankly, they're just very good people. Two good leaders in our community.
Well, I'm excited, Stu. I'm excited to see what they have to say. So without further ado, listeners, let's jump in.
Well, hello, listeners, Colorado Springs and beyond. Welcome to another conversation designed to keep you connected to what's happening in our community and ways that you can take action toward building a thriving city. The conversation in front of us today is actually one that I've been looking forward to for some time. I think I can say at the beginning of every episode, I can say that, but it continues to be true and is at least as true today as it has ever been. I talk a lot about 'Cause I Love You, working toward a day when the local Big C Church can be our city's most trusted partner and advocate in doing two things: alleviating human suffering and advancing human flourishing. And those are really lofty goals. They're big challenges. But the two guests that I have across the table from me today, in ways that may surprise you, are also working toward those very two things as well, which is exactly why I'm excited to introduce them to you. My first guest is both a colleague and a friend, and our connection demonstrates why I tell people all the time that Colorado Springs is the biggest small town you'll ever live in. Susan Whelan is the executive director of the El Paso County Public Health Department, which was really thrust into the spotlight when COVID-19 hit here in the U.S. in early 2020. She and I were classmates in a local leadership development program called the Colorado Springs Leadership Institute, or CSLI, in 2018. But we first got to know each other when I was her daughter's under-8 soccer coach many years ago, and her daughter just flitted around the soccer field like a little butterfly. And since then, she's become widely recognized as one of the premier leaders in any sector in our community. And as you can imagine, has had one heck of a time over these last couple of years. So if anyone is listening to this podcast is tired, you can imagine what Susan might feel like lately. But Susan, it really is my privilege to have you here. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you so much, Stu.
My other guest is someone I've not had the opportunity to get to know quite as well, but who comes with no less respect or credibility, Dr. Leon Kelly. Dr. Kelly is our El Paso County coroner, a seat that he has held since when, Dr. Kelly?
Since 2018.
Since 2018. And prior to that was our county's chief medical officer, a role he held since 2008. He's also the board chair for the local chapter of NAMI, which is a leading nonprofit dealing with mental health here in our community, the National Association for Mental Illness. And he's performed over, get this, 4,000 forensic autopsies on top of 60,000 death investigations. So if you're listening and you're wondering why the coroner, think about this. Who else in our community knows more about the health issues affecting our community more than the one person responsible for logging nearly every death that takes place here? And so while we don't know each other quite as well yet, every person I know who mentions Dr. Kelly never fails to mention his humility as much as his professionalism. So Dr. Kelly, welcome. Thanks for being here. So Dr. Kelly, I kind of want to start with you, really, because so few people understand the role of their local coroner, aside from maybe perhaps some of us who watch CSI or something like that. Can you just talk about your role a bit and what is your responsibility in our community?
Yeah, so the coroner's responsibility is to investigate all sudden, unexpected, or non-natural deaths. Essentially, it's my job to figure out how and why people die. It's not necessarily every person. If you're older and you have, you know, metastatic cancer or something like that, and we know that you're going to pass and you do, then that's not something I get involved in. But generally what I'm doing is investigating our homicides or suicides or drug deaths, car crashes, kind of all the bad stuff. And so it's my responsibility to figure out what went wrong and provide tools to the community, to our leaders, to our public health department, to our hospitals, to our media, so that we all understand what's happening and we are better prepared and equipped to prevent those same things from happening to people in the future.
So I can't imagine that there were a ton of people lined up for your job, that there's a lot of people who just dream of poring over dead bodies for a living. How did you end up in a role like this?
No. I mean, I don't think anybody's born growing up. I want to be a coroner or something. Yeah. Like maybe one of the Adams family kids or something. But But no, I went to medical school to be a doctor to help people. And you along the way, you figure out what you're good at and what's important to you. And I became a pathologist, which is a doctor whose specialty is the study of disease. And then forensic pathology is this type of pathologist that I am. And that's a doctor who's specifically trained in the forensic sciences, doing autopsies, kind of being at the forefront of a lot of these sort of social ills. It puts us in a position where we have the opportunity to make really dramatic impacts, not just to the families of people who've lost someone that day, right? Because their loved ones died, and now we're going to figure out why, and we're going to communicate to them. And answering those questions and helping them shuttle through those first steps of grief are really are critical in helping ensure that they are going to be successful moving forward. Mm-hmm. But then also, as you take a step back, we play a crucial role in public health and the overall health of a community. And so that to me is it's incredibly powerful. There's few jobs that allow you to make that big of an impact, not only on the ground, but at sort of the 30,000 foot level as well.
Yeah. And we're going to talk more about that in this episode. So Susan, that kind of leads into your role. I think as broad as Dr. Kelly's is, yours is perhaps even broader. Help our listeners understand the role of El Paso County Public Health and perhaps even how you came into the role that you're in.
Sure. I'll start a little bit narrow and then I'll take it broad. But I was fortunate to meet Dr. Kelly back in 2014. I've been with public health for over 20 years and I've held numerous positions. I started as an environmental health inspector and I was inspecting construction sites for air quality and minor source inspections to prevent air pollution, and also doing restaurant inspections and those kinds of things. And I held numerous different roles. And in 2014, I was promoted to deputy director, and I had the responsibility of leading the child fatality review team with Dr. Kelly. And that's where he was not elected coroner at that point, but we shared a similar mindset and passion for the health of youth. And at that time, we were experiencing severe impacts to our community, just devastating, where kids were taking their lives. And it really was a situation where Dr. Kelly and I wanted to do more than just lead a child fatality review team and look at the files and investigate and come up with the whys and the prevention. And it's very a complex topic. But Dr. Kelly and I really led efforts in the community, pulled a lot of leaders together, secured funding, and that funding is stable now, where we are a national model that others reach out to seek assistance on our strategies. And we are making steady, positive impacts. And we still need to keep up the momentum. But Dr. Kelly and I work together to build that foundation. And public health does not work in a silo. We need numerous partners. And because I love you, you all know that through the pandemic, we relied on you for numerous different efforts and helping people get food or whatever resources that they needed, because we have a small but mighty, mighty staff. And we're more about population-based health care. So our services don't primarily focus on going to see the doctor, clinical care, although we do provide vaccinations and some resources for high-risk patients. But we focus on, just like Dr. Kelly, data. What is the data telling us? And so what are the top three killers in our county? And then where can we make investments to come up with effective strategies that include public health, but also appropriate partners to make a greater impact?
Yes. So many good things that you said in there, frankly, and a few things that we definitely will come back to. I think, you know, obviously we have not, as a community, unfortunately, put teen suicide behind us, but you know, we've been able to watch and participate even in the efforts that you guys have made to bring in additional partners, including the faith community, to really address what for several years was really at a crisis level, and to really reverse a trend that was very scary for a long time. And we're going to get into some of these kind of data-driven trends that you guys are seeing, again, things that are happening now and perhaps are coming along. But Susan, you and I started working more closely together at 'Cause I Love You and your team during the initial outbreak of COVID-19. And that was certainly very much a time. Can you just briefly talk about your perspective on the pressures and the challenges and the strains that your team was facing during 2020 and into 2021 and maybe even today? But how has that looked for you and for your team here over these last couple of years?
Sure. And so from a personal perspective, I mean, my faith is very strong. Mm-hmm. And I had built up a lot of resilience to go through what Dr. Kelly and I went through in the past couple of years. It was long, intense. We were working way more than 8 hours a day from the time that my feet hit the ground to the time that I hit my bed. I was working. Yeah. There was very little time to eat, very little time sometimes to go to the bathroom. I selected things to eat like toast because those were easy. We were 24/7 trying to figure out what is the situation. And I knew early on, I saw the tidal wave coming. And I reached out to Dr. Kelly, and we'll see how he feels about this. But, you know, as the coroner, he doesn't have a responsibility to lead the effort for a COVID response. Public health has a statutory responsibility, and I have medical direction there. But I reached out to him to volunteer. Dr. Kelly, could you please serve as my deputy medical director? Because I already had a medical director, but I knew that we were going to need more resources. Mm-hmm. Public health in this community, you know, we do have a lean staff. And so I knew that the current staff that we had, we were going to need to bolster up and to try to get more folks, you know, involved in the response. And so the challenges were enormous. And I think that it's nothing that I have ever faced on a personal front or professional front. And I hope it's something that I never go through again. Dr. Kelly knows that we have shared we've shared a lot, and we've helped each other out a lot, but we have some very vivid memories also of dates and time and what happened and when,
yeah,
and what we were facing.
Yeah.
And we sometimes didn't receive a lot of support from the public that was vocal.
Yeah.
We were doing too much for some, and we were doing too many for some. And so it was a constant pressure. I have so many stories to tell related to, the good people in our community. And I said, always, you know, one of the first presentations, you know, look for the helpers from Mr. Rogers.
Hmm.
And I believe that you have to look around for what the positive influence is, what, who's willing to help, because there's always going to be people out there that are, saying you're not doing this right or throwing stones at you. And you have to keep moving forward. You can't focus on that type of negativity. I think it's important to address questions and clarification in the data. But I also believe that me, my staff, Dr. Kelly, we deserve to be treated professionally. And that's a standard that I uphold, but I can tell you that it's been rough.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it has been. And again, just from kind of a professional distance, knowing that we've been partners, but also we've seen each other from time to time throughout, you know, these last few years in the community, just knowing that I'm not sure that there's anybody who's worked as hard as the two of you have to just manage really what I think was an impossible set of circumstances over these last couple of years. And I mean, we could have a whole conversation about just leadership and trial and perseverance and all those other things. It's not the purpose of this conversation, but I just want to make sure that I commend the two of you guys for, I mean, incredible sacrifices, sometimes that I saw and many times that nobody saw, that the two of you guys made to really keep our community moving, and oftentimes in the face of some very direct opposition. And I just want to say thanks. It has not gone unnoticed. I think for people who have been watching and paying attention, I know that the two of you guys have been two of several that our community would point to and just say, you know, thank you. Because it was a really difficult couple of years. So, all right, let's kind of redirect here. Dr. Kelly, I want to bring you back in. Certainly you've dealt with the challenges that we've faced over these past few years, but it hasn't always been about deaths resulting from COVID. There's so many other things. I've heard you speak a few different times about the rapid rise in other causes of death recently. I don't want to be too morbid, but you are kind of the death doctor. You know what's killing our community. What are some of the things that you see over these past few years that perhaps we as a community maybe need to be more concerned about, or at least more aware of? And in particular, are there trends that you think our general public might not be aware of?
Yeah, I think when we look at the horizon about what we want to do, you know, we have limited resources, right? Any community does. And so we want to make sure we are using that energy collectively to take on the things that one need to be taken on, and two, we can make an impact. And that is one of my responsibilities, to highlight what those things are and sort of focus our energy and efforts towards them. And certainly, you know, COVID was what it was. You know, it was a global pandemic. Humans tend to focus on what's happening in their own community and not realize that every town and village and city on earth was dealing with these same things. And that's true of a lot of stuff that we see here, fentanyl being one of them. It's obviously been a lot in the news. It's at the front of a lot of people's minds. You know, 5 years ago, we had about 5 fentanyl deaths in El Paso County for the entire year. Every year since 2017, that total has doubled or more than doubled. We had last year in 2021, we had 99 individuals die of fentanyl.
Wow.
And this year we're on pace to probably hit about 120, 130, something like that. Hmm. It will for the first time probably overtake methamphetamine as our number one drug that is killing people in this community. But this is different in that who it's killing is very different. When you look at all drugs in El Paso County and you take fentanyl out and you look at the average age, it's about 47 years old. If you look at the average age of fentanyl only deaths, it's 35. And so that drug is killing younger people, people earlier in their substance abuse history. And in some cases, tragically, 5 of those 99 were in kids, people less than 18 years of age. And so that's certainly an area where us as leaders as individuals in the community, particularly the faith-based community, and anybody who's youth-facing that plays a role in young yeah. people's lives is going to play a role here. I think the other thing is there's been a lot of talk about mental health. And we've actually been fortunate in this community in that the last 3 years we've stayed relatively stable in our total number of suicides despite some obvious population growth. The numbers aren't, we're not to the end of the year yet, but I can tell you if things remain the same, we will be up in our suicides for 2022. And when we look at the things that we talk about as community, when you talk to your neighbors, you talk about, you know, homelessness, and you talk about substance abuse, and you talk about suicides, and you talk about, you know, a lot of the things that are going on in our community and across the country, all those things boil down often to mental health or a lack of mental wellness. Which is not the focus that we've had historically. We've treated mental health as we wait till the crisis and then we intervene. Mm-hmm. And that's not an effective way to make change in anything,
yeah.
in any
yeah.
aspect of your health, any part of your community, to wait till someone's literally on the ledge to do something about it. And I think if we really want to tackle a lot of these issues that are on the front of our minds that are necessary to tackle, it's got to begin way upstream with mental health and mental wellness and making sure people have the tools and skills to take care of themselves, but then also their friends and neighbors mm-hmm. and identify who's struggling and what we need to do to get them help.
I'm really so glad that you brought up the issue of mental health, both of you, because I think there is a direct connection and your evidence and the data that you guys have would corroborate this, a direct connection between the isolationism that's kind of really rampant and the loneliness that often people feel, which leads to so many issues related to mental health or mental illness. And then obviously some of the things that are starting to frankly kill our community, substance abuse, suicide, some of these other things. So I'm so glad that you brought this around. Can either or both of you just talk about the intersection of these issues related to mental health / mental illness and some of the trends that you see it drastically affecting our community?
I'll talk about mental health and then maybe Dr. Kelly can talk about mental illness. So getting back to the COVID response, early in 2020, we did see that it was going to take a heavy impact on El Paso County, and we wanted to set El Paso County up with increased resilience. So we reached out to Dr. Benight, Chip mm-hmm. Benight with mm-hmm. UCCS, the Resilience Center, and he is a phenomenal resource at UCCS, and we were able to work with him and other mental health providers to increase resilience and provide tools and resources on how people could be coaches in their own communities. I think that that's really important because some of the simple things that we can do related to checking in on people, when you talk about people being isolated, you know, a simple text or a phone call or stopping by, hey, are you doing okay? What do you need? I see you. Because, you know, sometimes when people are feeling very low, they're not going to have the energy to reach out. Mm-hmm. And I think mental health too, from a very personal perspective, is that, you know, I want to model the way. And I had to reach out for therapy. Mm-hmm. I had to reach out for talk therapy. I have never been so low in my life mm-hmm. when I was going through COVID and the response, because it was like a tidal wave, a roller coaster. It was, and, you know, working so many different hours and trying to figure out, like, you know, I'm not feeling any joy. I don't have any, you know, any of my buckets. I mean, they're dry. How do I fill, fill them? Like, even when you don't feel like going outside and, you know, taking a walk or, you know, and every single day too, when we were, you know, had to implement certain prevention measures from a community perspective, every day, you know, I was, you know, you're looking at the same four walls, you know, walking upstairs or walking downstairs, or when I'd go outside, it was like, okay, well, do I want to take a right? Do I want to take a left? Do I want to, walk across the street? It was the same view. It was the same, thing kind of every single day. And so I think that what we are trying to do, and we still need others to help out, is to increase help seeking behavior. Mm. When people are hurting, that it's okay to reach out. That's a sign of strength. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's incredibly important. And then also when we see teens in schools, you know, there are certain, strategies that we need to make sure that all kids, like if you see a kid sitting alone at a, you know, eating or they're isolated, I mean, we need to intervene more, and be kind mm-hmm. to others, where in these past couple of years, I've seen a lot of aggression and I've been a target of, you know, some of the aggression. You know, we've had to get, police escorts in, you know, some of our, you know, to our presentations. And then also, Dr. Kelly and I were filled with, you know, so much negativity that a lot of times, I mean, we would just leave. We wouldn't listen to that, because the time to actually bring some reason to someone is not when they're elevated.
Right.
But I think it is so critical that, folks learn mental health first aid, which is what we worked with a faith-based mm-hmm. community on, mm-hmm. And just to increase that awareness. That's a big resource, and getting involved with resilience building with Dr. Benight and UCCS. Those are two great resources.
Yeah, and actually, Dr. Benight was the guest on episode number 3. Of this podcast. I mean, way back when we first got started, it's a phenomenal resource they've developed at UCCS. So Dr. Kelly, anything that you'd add to that in terms of, again, this kind of two-sided coin of mental illness and mental health?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that highlights this is, you know, our current fentanyl issue, mm-hmm. Fentanyl crisis. And, you know, the average person who doesn't deal in this world every single day hears this, that this new drug is here and it's killing people. But the reality is we're 30 years into an opioid epidemic in this country, the beginning in the 90s with the overprescribing of you know, pharmaceuticals, of medication. And we put a lot of effort into curbing that and getting those drugs off the street and educating our, not only our consumers of medications, but also our doctors and our clinicians. And we saw success there with reducing the amount of prescription drug overdoses. Unfortunately, though, we didn't solve the underlying issue, which was addiction. We handled it at a sort of a punitive level. And then we saw the rise of heroin in this country that we hadn't seen in many decades, resulting in obviously even more deaths. And then all the other things that go along with illicit drug trade, the crime and the violence that goes with it. And then we put a lot of effort into that. We arrest people and we try to get drugs out of the country, and we do all those things that we should be doing. And now we have fentanyl, and so we see this kind of ratcheting up. And the truth at every step is we did some things well, but we never addressed what the problem was. And if you don't address what the underlying issue is, you're never going to actually solve the problem. And we see those same things with homelessness and suicide and substance abuse and all these other things. Is it's hard to get down and dig down and deal with those underlying issues. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And one of my core values is we're never going to arrest our way out of this drug crisis that we're in. We're just not. They play a role, absolutely. But unless we put the effort and the energy and the resources into raising healthier young people, and getting the people who are not only addicted now the help that they need, but invest upstream so that we don't create the next generation of substance abusers, then we're just going to be on this cycle forever. You know, the people who manufacture these drugs are always going to come up with more drugs.
Yeah.
The issue is raising healthier people with the tools to navigate the stresses of the world so that they don't have these unhealthy coping strategies.
So let me ask you guys both to get a little bit practical on that subject. How do we do that? What are the strategies? What are the tools? Who are the people, the organizations? What are the partnerships that need to be put in place so that this next generation has what they need in order for some of these alarming trends to start to turn downward?
I think the good thing is that what works for substance abuse also works for homelessness, also works for suicide, works for a lot of these things. Our understanding of how you treat mental illness, or once again, a lack of mental wellness has evolved. And the way I think of it, I've read great work by academics, but also people on the ground that say humans need three things to flourish. They need people, they need a place, and they need a purpose. They need to be surrounded by people who support them, who are there to celebrate their achievements, but also have a shoulder to cry on when they need help, when they need somebody to reach out to. They need a community, a tribe of people who love them, who care for them unconditionally. They need a place that they can go, whether that's a church, whether that's a community group, whether that's people who share the same passions or hobbies or a family or friends or whatever you choose your family to look like. You need a place to go to be with those people. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing is every human being needs a purpose. They need a reason to get up every day. Mm-hmm. And they need something bigger than them to invest their life into. They need something that gives them meaning and purpose and passion every single day. And when humans have those three things, they will flourish and they will thrive. But if you lose one of those three things, that's when bad things happen. And that's when people fall off the trajectory that they should be on. And the longer they're without one of those three things, the harder it is to get them back into society, into a place where they're welcome. And I know you've talked about things like affordable housing and other stuff like that. And that's how that all plays a role. So substance abuse is different for every person. Homelessness is different for every person. Mental health, mental illness is different for every person, but they share some of these commonalities. And while they how they got there may be different from one person to the next, what it takes to support them and bring them back in is going to be the same for all those people. Mm-hmm. And we need to find whoever you are, whatever you do in the community, you have the ability to plug into one of those three things and play a role. You just need to figure out what your gifts are that allows you to do that. You can't do it all. Right. And that's what makes it feel overwhelming at times for us who are in this kind of fight. But if you pick your little corner of the world that you know, hey, I can help do that, and play that piece of it, that's where we're going to find success.
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the stories that we get the chance to kind of talk about quite a bit here at 'Cause I Love You, as a result of our partnership with Susan, your team at El Paso County Public Health, has been just the great opportunity to connect a small neighborhood church with a handful of people and not much to offer, but to a neighbor right around the corner that they may have never known was struggling. And so when somebody calls a crisis hotline in our community and says, I need some help and I don't know where else to turn, and there's an agency that there is no agency in our community that has the ability to meet that need, your team kicks it over here to 'Cause I Love You. We're able to connect to a local church to say, did you know that there's a neighbor right around the corner from you that just, they need some groceries, they need somebody to check in on them, they're just lonely, whatever the case might have been. And oftentimes that connection, the opportunity to know there's somebody right around the corner from me that needs some help and I can help them, that connection then goes typically beyond the groceries that they need or the support that they need or the conversation that they were looking forward to. And it turns into some sort of supportive relationship. And that really is, to your very point, it's just connecting people to people. And it does avert oftentimes somebody going into further crisis, but it also provides somebody the ability to know somebody's here. Somebody knows me, somebody sees me, somebody's paying attention. And that's really what creates community, right? So I love that, the people, the place, the purpose. Susan, anything that you would add to that just as we continue to have this conversation?
Well, I would just emphasize that too. I mean, people, place, and purpose. And I think goes, you know, everything with that, you know, says connections to me. And I think it, you know, it doesn't have to be a large group. It could be just one person supporting someone and having that relationship. But, you know, in life, I mean, life is messy. Life does not, it's not always happy. There's challenges. And if you have person in your life that's supportive, or someone that can listen or help you in times of need, that goes a long way. And so, yeah, what I would say from a practical standpoint too is that, you know, who could you do that for? You don't have to be good friends, but you can see someone hurting, mm-hmm, and then you can figure out like, Hey, how can I help? Mm-hmm. Also, there are texting lines, there's crisis call in lines, and we can get you that information. There's a national line, universal, it's 988. Mm-hmm. And, that is in the process of building and, being a really great resource, but that's still under development. It's still available, but there is a Colorado crisis line and a text line also when kids like to text. That's a good resource that is confidential, yeah, for them.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to turn a bit of a corner as we kind of head towards the end of our conversation. I want to talk about kind of the cost and the challenges, particularly of public leadership. We have a range of people who listen to this podcast, but most of them are leading something somewhere. We have pastors who are leading local churches with very public roles. We have business and marketplace folks who lead their organizations, nonprofit leaders who are working in service to the needy. But regardless of which circles we're in, the last couple of years have been exhausting for leaders. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here. I think about the two of you, and honestly, I'm not quite sure why or how you haven't called it quits yet for any number of very understandable reasons. In fact, Dr. Kelly, on a phone call that you and I had recently, you referred to your and Susan's roles as uniquely stressful, which I thought was an interesting phrase. But not only are you still in it, but you're wanting to stay in it. And what have you learned about yourself, about taking care of yourself as a leader, as a person, as a spouse, or perhaps even as a parent this last year or so?
Yeah, I think that from a leadership standpoint, my only goal coming into this whole thing, I grew up in a trailer park on the west side of Indianapolis. So I was the first generation to go to college. So being a doctor and helping lead a community through a pandemic really wasn't on the radar. What were my goals were? I was just like, I wanted to make enough money that I could afford like popcorn when you went to the movies. Like that was my ultimate, that was like as my kid's brain, that was ultimate economic success.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I made it. I do.
Well
done. I do it. Yeah. And so, you know, what I have learned is, one, you want to surround yourself with incredible people. And in my brain, the epitome of great leadership, or how I see like the pinnacle of success from a leadership and collaborative standpoint, is Apollo 13, when like everything went crazy and all they did was like got the smartest, most committed people they could find in a room together. And then they just like used duct tape and like dryer vents to like get humans home from like a disastrous, yeah, mission to the moon. Right. Mm. And that's what I thought about throughout COVID, was like, there's no blueprint for how to deal with life, and certainly not a pandemic, but anything, really, any of these problems, we're figuring this out as we go. And so to have the opportunity to be, you know, with folks like Susan or public health department or hospitals, just like literally the smartest people I've ever met, just figuring it out, right, as you go along, was incredible. So to have the opportunity to make a difference in your community, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's worth it, because everyone would not have gone through that. But, you know, it certainly was an incredible period, I think, of certainly my life, is even as stressful as it is. But that can't happen without people at home to support you. I mean, you know, I have two little kids, and while I was, you know, on TV trying to teach people how to stay safe, my wife's got like being teaching school, and most wives or spouses, some husbands, some grandmas, some neighbors, were all pulled together to make that happen, right? To get us through that period. And so I think times of trial, you really show people who they are, you know? And I remember before the pandemic, my brother and I went to the World War II Museum in New Orleans. It's my favorite museum on earth. If you've never been there, you got to go. It's unbelievable. And they have this room where you learn about the Western Front and the Eastern Front and then the home front. And my brother, who's a lawyer, we're standing there and looking at, you know, the home front building, what all the things that happened. And I leaned to him like, dude, like if anything like has happened, this is like 2019. If anything like this ever happened again, like, do you think we could really pull it together enough to get through it? He's like, I don't know, man. I don't know. These people were amazing. But, you know, these things have happened before. They've happened, you know, of all different types, and they'll happen again. And when they do, you know, not everybody's going to pull together. And we saw that, and that's been true forever. But there are going to be enough people who show up and deliver and put everybody else in front of what they need to get us through it. And so I appreciate those people, and Susan's one of them.
It's quite a compliment. So for you, Susan, what have you kind of learned about yourself in terms of just hanging in there and sticking with it?
Well, I've learned so much, and I think that, you know, what's got me through, I've focused on being tenacious, building trust, and the trust doesn't come right in the middle of an emergency. I mean, it's built prior to that, and then who is actually standing by your side, actually helping, and then also being transparent. So the three T's, you know, being tenacious, building trust, and being transparent is really what I focused on. And I think that, you know, through different events or different situations, as a leader, you have to adapt. And adapting through this COVID response, you know, it had different needs at different points in time, because as you remember in the beginning, we didn't have enough resources. We didn't have enough tests. We didn't have vaccine. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a new emerging disease. I mean, there were a lot of things that we didn't know. But when you have, you know, good leaders by your side also, and you're leading in the process, you have confidence in that, and you keep on going day by day. I feel like I've trained to lead this local response pretty much my entire career, because back in 20 years ago when I started with the public health department, 9/11 happened. And at that time, public health was brought in the fold as first responders, and we were required to take national incident management system training. And so I had been trained on so many different emergency exercises, from fires to floods, functional exercises, built relationships with the Office of Emergency Management, from the state level to the local level, to the hospitals, to elected leaders. So I feel like it was kind of muscle memory, some of it, but some of it was very unexpected. And I always had the attitude with someone like, you know, Dr. Leon Kelly by my side too, is like, we're going to figure this out. Mm-hmm. We've had a bad day today, but we're going to be back at it again. And so being tenacious and never giving up. And I have learned so much about local leadership in year one, Stu, that I have a tremendous amount of respect for so many people in our community. And I know who said that they were going to be there, and they were there. Mm. And I know some people that maybe said they were going to be there, and they weren't. Mm. And so I learned who I can count on, who I can trust. And we have amazing elected leaders here, as well as, you know, leadership is not a title. It's just there's so many different leaders in the community. And so there were times when I thought that I've had enough. I'll be upfront about that, and I've shed many tears because, again, I mean, I've never been treated so poorly in my life, related to some situations, and the public won't see that. And it's not about, you know, some of maybe even what you would think about. I mean, but some of the situations were really hard, very hard. But I think about my team. And the longevity of our agency and the importance of what our mission is. I think about, you know, not giving up and being a fighter. It would take a lot for me to quit. Mm-hmm. And so when I retire, it's going to be on my terms. It's not going to be on anyone else's terms, like kind of pushing me out or because I'm up against something. Because I felt all along through the response that we were leading that we were using good data. We were making data decisions. Mm-hmm. We didn't know everything, but I felt that we led with integrity. And I was very confident through what my team was doing. And also, we're in a leadership position where it's about service. It's about caring about people, and doing what we can to keep people healthy and to save lives, and giving them the tools and the resources necessary to do that. So looking back, I'm very proud of my team. I'm very proud of all of the partnerships that we've you know, maintained and developed. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't have, you know, done it without our partners.
Yeah.
I think about you and when we met at the leadership program, CSLI, every single member of our group I worked with in the pandemic response, and we already had that trust built up to take action and, yeah. and to work together. And I look forward to what we're going to do in the future, because we do have a great county, we have great leaders, and I have a lot of joy these days, and I actually am really looking forward to the future.
Good. Well, I'm certainly glad that both of you are still in it, and I want to kind of wrap up this conversation. I like to wrap up these conversations actually, particularly with leaders like yourselves who are in or with government agencies, with just some practical ways that the local faith community can be of help. I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation that we want to find ways for the local church to be your partners in stopping the progression of things that are hurting us or alleviating human suffering and advancing the things that will help us or human flourishing. So how would you invite the faith community to be your partners? How can we work better together?
To me, the key thing that I think the faith-based community has, or the role that they can play in a lot of these issues, we know what they do to serve others, right? In so many ways. But for families, for individuals, for kids, for husbands and wives and folks who are struggling, oftentimes the church, their church, is the first place that they seek help. And historically, the faith-based community has been uncomfortable with that in some respects, is we're not there for people's mental health. Certainly, along historical, certainly faith-based communities have had issues with mental health and, mm-hmm. and how to present that, how to deal with that. But I think by taking on those roles, and they're not clinicians, they're not psychiatrists, but every church in this community can take mental health first aid. You know, every single minister, church leader, small group leader can know what resources are out there in the community, not just the crisis hotlines, but folks like NAMI,
yep.
who I'm on the board chair for, Pikes Peak Suicide Prevention, Springs Recovery. There are so many incredible nonprofits in this community, but that just knowing who those players are, you can get somebody almost all the way down the field to where they need to be to get the resources. You don't need to solve their problems, but relish in that, right? Take on that responsibility of, if I have someone who has an acute crisis or somebody that I know is not doing well, I'm going to take the initiative and go talk to them. Don't wait for them to come to you in a crisis, but monitor the people around them. We know that the things, particularly with suicide and people that struggle, it's trouble with relationships, trouble with finances, legal troubles. Grief. People that are experiencing those things are the ones that we need to approach. We need to engage with and know where to go with somebody who needs help. There's great nonprofits in this community that if you just tap into them, we can get people the help that they need.
Yeah. So really, I hear you saying, particularly for local churches or the faith community, to say, don't be afraid to ask the questions, even if you don't know all the answers,
exactly.
Because we've got great organizations in this town who do and can help, but they just need somebody to interact and just say, are you doing okay? Yeah, that's great. Susan, anything you'd add to that?
I would just emphasize that, with the churches, people want to know that someone cares. And I think, at my church, even if they have different efforts around, if you're a single mom, how do you reach out and make sure that people aren't alone, or they, have some dinner for Thanksgiving. So I think that all of those aspects, too, I see that are very much alive and well and happening. I also know that, this was years ago before the pandemic, but Dr. Kelly and I used to do presentations. We were invited to various different churches to provide presentations and have an engaged conversation around suicide and what people can do. So I think that churches that want to get active is to reach out and know what collaborative efforts are going on and how do you plug in. We have a number of collaborative efforts on teen suicide prevention. We, in the future, are going to start working more heavily on all ages. So there will be an opportunity to get plugged in there. We have efforts around youth substance use prevention. And there's ways that the faith-based community can have a representative on the coalition, the collaborative, or key in as needed related to different events. There's a lot of education and awareness that we could do partnering. There's so many efforts that I think, and everyone, everyone doesn't have a limitless time, but I do think that there's always opportunities to get more connected, to increase awareness and work together, because I think ultimately that's what our community wants. I think that, you know, when you talk about leadership and you're talking about organizations and you're talking about churches and the public, people want to see, hey, how are you working together mm-hmm. to serve the community? Mm-hmm. Not, you know, pointing out like, hey, this is not being done, or just some of that, you know, information that's focused on. But, you know, there's so much we can do to accomplish and wellness around all ages for a thriving community.
Yeah. Well, Susan Whelan and Dr. Leon Kelly, I cannot thank both of you enough. I mean, certainly for the time that you've taken out of your day to be with me and us here on this podcast, but really more than that, for your tireless work. So very little of what you do ever gets recognized until someone calls it into question. And that's not an easy position. And I just want to be among maybe many people, hopefully, in your life who just say thank you for the countless times that your work and your leadership in our city saves people's lives and creates an opportunity for us to be better and healthier and enjoy our city more. So we see you and we want to care for you. So listeners, I'm not sure what popped to the surface for you in this conversation, but for me, there's so much here that we can and really should pay attention to. But let me just say one thing as we sign off. There have been no shortage of issues these past few years. And unfortunately, our individual stances or our response to those issues have just divided us far too quickly. And it's perfectly acceptable for any of us to have an opinion that may be different from somebody else's. But I also hope we recognize that behind any of these issues are people. People like these two friends of mine who have a very specific charge, but they also have a heart and a family and a story of their own. So I hope that we can be the kind of community that, regardless of our circumstance, regardless of our stance or our opinions, that we can uphold the value of people, even and perhaps especially those that we might disagree with. So let's work together to be that kind of community. I hope that you've enjoyed this conversation, and we will see you next time on the 'Cause I Love You podcast.
Stu, I was blown away by this conversation. These are two leaders that I would not naturally be in the room with very often. And so getting to hear from Dr. Kelly and from Susan, just eye-opening and really helpful for me as a community member. I would love to hear what you took away.
So many things. I mean, frankly, I have such enormous respect for the two of them and the things that they have had to endure over the last couple of years. Susan alluded to it a couple of different times. The challenges, the opposition that they faced, I think their perseverance has just been incredible. And I know a little bit, certainly not very much, but of some of what they've had to deal with. And I mentioned in the conversation the fact that they haven't quit. But not only that, I know our listeners can't see it, but we could see it sitting here at the table. The smiles on their faces. I mm-hmm. think Susan has just found a stride to be healthy and find a renewed sense of purpose in her role. Certainly Dr. Kelly has. I'm just blown away that they can come through these last few years, not only still standing, but smiles on their faces and a readiness to continue to do good work. Mm-hmm. I was just blown away by that.
Pretty astounding.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I think I was really moved by some of the practical things that I heard them talk about. I think it could be really easy to sit in their seats and to not necessarily think about it from the individual perspective, but they were sitting there with some advice that I was really moved by. Some of the things that I heard Susan mentioned, we need to increase help seeking behavior, which she alluded to, like, let's remove stigmas for talking about mental health. Let's increase the awareness for services in our city. Certainly Dr. Kelly said that as well. Dr. Kelly said something that I thought was really profound. And he said he read it somewhere, but, flourishing people are people that have a tribe. They've got their own people. They've got a place and they've got a purpose. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty powerful and really simple. So I was sitting here thinking about, how can I be someone's person in my community? How can I offer a place for someone? And how can I use purpose that I feel to encourage others? I think we could all look at those three and consider those for our community.
Yeah.
Really practical stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the note taker in me also loved kind of this conversation. I mean, Susan mentioned the three T's in her, you know, tenacity, trust, and transparency. Mm-hmm. And gosh, if we had more leaders who were willing to, with humility, try to instill those things amongst their teams and the people, the kind of the sphere of influence that they lead, What kind of a community would we look like, you know, if our leaders embrace those three things?
Yeah.
So her three T's, Dr. Kelly's three P's. I mean, I was just, you know, scribbling some notes that I thought was just brilliant. But it was really great to hear the invitation from them, for particularly for local churches, and especially for if you're listening to this and you're leading a local church, you're a part of the leadership in a faith community somewhere, to be able to hear the invitation from our public officials to say churches oftentimes are the front line in kind of encountering people who are struggling. And sometimes it's somebody within their congregation. Sometimes it's somebody who shows up at the door and needs help. But there was a very clear invitation from particularly from those two to say, please be our partners in meeting people where they're at, even if you don't know the answers, even if you don't know how to get them the help that they actually need, but at least paying attention to when people are struggling and they need help and being willing to ask some of those questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I will just say too, I think it was significant that they talked about the fentanyl crisis. I think it's significant that they mentioned if you are a youth facing staff, you have a mantle to impact young people in our city. So if you're listening to this and you're you're a coach, you're a youth pastor, you're a parent,
you're an educator,
If you are youth facing, there is a need for you to consider how to raise up young people that are not going to be thrown around by a mental health crisis or by the fentanyl crisis.
And as a very, very practical point of application, we have worked with churches and schools and other organizations that have implemented youth mental health first aid training, as well as just general mental health first aid training. That's a resource. It's a training tool that if you're unfamiliar with it, please reach out to us. We would love to connect you with organizations that train youth-facing individuals, the ones that Corey just mentioned, that can do a great job of helping give you some tools to help meet the particularly young people that you might encounter who are struggling with some very practical ways to offer some help. So listeners, thanks so much. I hope that you got as much out of this conversation as we did. How fascinating. And if this is something that you feel like you want to dig more into, please reach out to us at Cause I Love You and let us help connect you to ways that you can offer practical help. As always, if this episode has been helpful to you, please like it, rate it, share it, send it to somebody that you think would be inspired by it. And please continue to work towards the flourishing of our community. And that means helping people who need help and then finding ways to contribute to the flourishing of neighbors all over our city. You're a neighbor, you're a friend, you're a caretaker for somebody. So please lean into that and don't be afraid to have those hard conversations. Until next month, thanks so much for joining us on the 'Cause I Love You podcast.